Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk a bit about an episode that is without precedent in my experience, which is some 40 years now, I guess. We're going to talk with one of our distinguished colleagues and guests who has a wealth of experience as well in senior levels of our government, Dr. David Wormser, about it in a moment. But just my brief on the Lloyd Austin AWOL spectacle, absent without leave, I think describes what we experienced in the past week or so with the Secretary of Defense of the United States. The more we learn about the events precipitated apparently by elective treatment for cancer of the pancreas, prostate, I think it is actually, excuse me, the more troubling the story becomes. And the point is here that, unfortunately, I think it is indicative of the dysfunctionality of the Biden national security team that a man in as critical a position as that of Secretary of Defense at a moment like this could be missing for a week, just about, and nobody seems to have noticed. This is shocking in the extreme. I think it's clear that our enemies have noticed, as they have so much of what's wrong with the Biden team and its conduct of national security policy. They've been emboldened by it, whether it's Iran, whether it's the Russians, most especially the Chinese Communist Party. They're, I think, on the march in part because of it. And unfortunately, our friends, notably Israel and Ukraine and Taiwan, I think are increasingly feeling as though they're on their own at best, and at worst, they're being undermined by this Team Biden national security group. The point is that we need competent, tested, and robust warriors running our national security policy at a moment like this, especially if we seek to deter what might be coming next. We need them now. Let's talk about all this with Dr. David Wormser. As I mentioned, he is a friend and colleague at our Center for Security Policy, where he directs our Mideast programs. He is a man who has extensive experience at senior most levels of the United States government. He was a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy Reserves, specializing in intelligence matters. He's served with an undersecretary of state, a national security advisor, and also a vice president of the United States. He has, in other words, expertise that is very much in need at the moment, and I wanted to ask him about this Lloyd Austin spectacle. David Wormser, first of all, thank you for joining us. We're always appreciative of your time, and it's very much in need at this moment. So thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
What are we to make of what has gone down here with Lloyd Austin, and does it speak more broadly about what's going on with this administration?
Well, what happened with Lloyd Austin strikes me as it's on one level fortunate, because when we look at what happened to Israel on October 7th, it was complacent, it was asleep. It was a nation that stopped thinking it had a threat directed at its throat. And as a result, they weren't mobilized. There were only 700 soldiers on the border. Intelligence wasn't focused on the enemy, etc. What you have here with Lloyd Austin is like the first stage of October 7th, but without yet the attack. So what is exposed here is that our defense structure is asleep. We have a Secretary of State, as you mentioned, went AWOL, and the White House didn't even notice for 4 days. Secretary of Defense went AWOL for 4 days, and the White House didn't even notice. Moreover, his deputy's on vacation. In other words, the Pentagon essentially dropped off the face of the earth for the White House for 4 days, and nobody even noticed. This tells you the level to which the United States right now is asleep and how poised we are for an October 7th like attack on a global scale. Wow. So that to me is
including the here at home, as we'll be talking about shortly,
right.
With Colonel Grant Newsom. David, let me just ask you this. Again, you've served in the National Security Council. You've been in the Pentagon. You've been at the State Department. Is the way this has been possible, really, is that the Pentagon, at least the civilian leadership of it, is more or less irrelevant, and that the national security advisor to the president, Jake Sullivan, is running everything kind of out of his hip pocket, which is something we've had some hard experience with in the past, and generally has been discouraged in successive administrations since.
Well, I think it means two things. One is that there's a very centralized or very narrow group of people who are running our foreign policy and defense policy, but also it means that staff is operating on its own. It's nobody noticed probably because the Defense Department staff was still showing up. And what that gets down to another big problem, which is the staff of this administration runs this administration. Well, you can look at Biden, and there's a great deal of ink wasted on interpreting where President Biden is on issues. And what we see here is it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant because the staff runs the government. When you look at the nature of the staffing of this administration, these are extremist progressive types who are at the core on the high level, the Undersecretary of Defense, Undersecretary of State level. These are core radical progressives. And that tells you the real essence of policy in this administration.
Yeah. I'm rather uncomfortable with the idea that they're just progressives. They really seem to be pretty much full-on Marxists.
Oh, absolutely.
In most of these cases. And on top of it, David, and we want to get to your particular portfolio in this regard, because it's directly relevant to how they're conducting themselves with respect to Israel, that they are, not only Marxist, but I think they're deeply sympathetic to Israel's enemies, notably Iran and its proxies, of course, but also that they are hostile to the Jewish state itself. And do you agree with that assessment based on what we've seen to date?
Oh, it's absolutely clear that's the case. They essentially are taking their talking points from the UN and UN organizations, UN organizations that we know worked very closely with Hamas. UNRWA, just an email was uncovered of 3,000 United Nations Relief Works Agency. That's the UN body responsible for Palestinian affairs and aid being delivered to Palestinians and schooling of Palestinians. 3,000 of its workers signed a letter praising the attacks of October 7th, which included the beheading of babies, stuffing babies in ovens, systematic rape of everybody, including children and even toddlers, and so on and so forth. So they praised this. This is UNRWA, the UN bodies that Secretary Blinken yesterday said are the only framework through which Israel can operate in Gaza afterwards to bring law and order. The problem is half of our staff or some of our staff at the highest levels of the U.S. government are alumni of these organizations.
Yeah. Including the guy in charge of intelligence for the National Security
Council. Including the guy in charge of intelligence. So, of course, they're going to rely not on our forces on the ground, our intelligence, they're going to rely on these UN bodies who are their posse, their cadre, for information as well.
I want to pick up on this very point because one of the things Tony Blinken advertised in his press conference yesterday is that we're going to turn over assessing what needs to be done here to the UN. We'll be right back with more with Dr. David Warnzer right after this. This is Frank Afting with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's bizarre no-notice absence without leave turns out to have been a result of his treatment for cancer. Revelations that he was off the job for the better part of a week, and no one noticed, though, are but the latest evidence of Team Biden's dangerously metastasizing dysfunctionality. Enemies like Iran, Russia, and especially Communist China are increasingly emboldened by the Biden administration's unwillingness to challenge, let alone meaningfully punish, their aggression. Friends like Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan are increasingly on their own, if not actually being undermined by feckless U.S. diplomacy and declining military power. In the absence, literally and figuratively, of effective Pentagon leadership, we're left with a weak National Security Council and even more hapless State Department mismanaging our national security policy. We need tested, robust, and competent warriors in charge now. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Dr. David Wormser. David, there is so much to talk about and unfortunately a limited amount of time, but I did want to get your general take on the state of the war at the moment and to give our audience, a sort of practical guide as to what to be looking for. There's a lot of talk about, limiting escalation and, avoiding that particular problem. Is that what's being done here, or is in fact all of this contributing to an emboldening, as I said earlier, of our enemies and Israel's?
Well, it's at this point, I think we've crossed over from not helping to actually being a problem on two levels. First of all, the weakness, the unbelievable weakness we have shown to the Houthis, and the trashing of 400 years of Anglo-Saxon maritime policy, let alone 200 years of American defense policy of freedom of the seas. We are not shutting down the Houthi threat. We are operating strictly defensively and very limited, and it's not shutting anything down. So the shipping to Israel, shipping through the canal, is Suez Canal is finished. There's nothing. Shipping is now being threatened to the rest of Israel. Shipping companies are beginning to tell Israel they will not ship even to its Mediterranean ports. So essentially, Israel's coming under naval blockade. This is a very serious affair. And the United States, instead of at least getting out of the way to let Israel do it, because Israel, from what I understand, was seriously thinking of attacking the Houthis to end this problem, was told not to do it. We'll take care of it. And we didn't take care of it. And this is now on a more global level. The only thing the administration is doing is don't escalate, don't escalate, don't escalate, when the Israelis right now very much need to escalate to win this war.
Mm-hmm. And the implications if they don't win this war, and when you're talking about this war, I know, David, from our many conversations on this, that you appreciate there's a front in Gaza to this war, for sure, but it is not the only front. And I gather you have some urgent and very disturbing news on the northern front, with Hezbollah as well.
I think Gaza, first of all, the United States now turned the corner this week with Secretary Blinken of basically trying to stop Israel from winning even in Gaza, even the very limited war with Gaza. The framework that Secretary Blinken put forward for how Israel has to behave essentially means that Israel has to stop in place. And by stopping in place, it means that 60% of Gaza falls to or stays in the hands of Hamas, the ability to launch missiles and further attacks on Israelis. So nothing will have been achieved. None of Israel's goals have been achieved in Gaza yet. So there's that. But you're right. This is only part of the larger structure. And frankly, right now, it's not even the most important. The most important right now is to understand how much of an aggressive threat Iran is posing regionally, whether it's through Hezbollah, through the Houthis, through Iraq, through even Algeria. And the United States' response to that is to double down on the paradigm of engagement with Iran and essentially trying to come up with a trade. You be a little bit more moderate, and we surrender the region strategically to you. So this is really about whether Iran emerges from this war strategically stronger or weaker. And the Israelis are our agent, Western agent, of weakening and reversing the strategic direction in the region against Iran. And yet we're...
For their own reasons, not just
for their own
on
reason,
our behalf.
For their own reasons.
That's
but what
they need to do can, as well as we need to have done.
Exactly. It's for their own reasons. And that's very fortunate because here we have an ally for their own reasons who would do something that strategically can help the West. And that means we don't have to do it. But instead, for some reason, well, not for some reason, we have our concepts, but for the various misguided reasons that we operate under, we are essentially moving to hand Iran a strategic victory and to protect Iran. So the same way we're essentially now moving to make Palestine safe for Abu Mazen and the PLO through the Israeli army, we are now trying to make the region safe for Iran by restraining the Israelis.
Yeah. David, one of the things that really struck me about Secretary of State Blinken's appearance in a press conference in Israel after meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu and so on was the degree to which he conveyed what you've basically just described, you know, a fundamental hostility towards Israel finishing the job in Gaza and opposing, you know, getting people out of there, if one can, getting, you know, the Hamas elements rooted out. And instead, the focus is on basically creating a Palestinian state comprised of it and the West Bank, presumably, that would be in the hands of Palestinian leaders who are committed to living side by side in peace with Israel. And I'm struggling to name a single Palestinian leader who actually fits that description. Am I missing a cohort that is out there that that Tony Blinken expects to do that job?
No, the same way that they have a delusional viewpoint on the United Nations and its structures as being agents of Hamas, they have a delusional outlook on the Palestinian Authority and the PLO. The PLO is training to do an October 7th type attack on Israel. Preparations are being made.
In the West Bank
in the West
or in Israel proper?
In the West Bank. In the West Bank onto Israeli cities and towns in Israel from the West Bank. So this is now brigade level training, not only just one or two or 10 soldiers. So, and they say they
would these be these security personnel that Tony Blinken was talking about so favorably?
These are the security personnel the United States has helped train, run by the Palestinian Authority. And the Palestinian Authority isn't being particularly coy about it either. They're praising the October 7th attacks. They're very clear. And by the way, certain units of the Palestinian Authority, that is the PFLP and the Al-Aqsa Brigades, both of whom are part of Fatah, the PLO, which is Abu Mazen's faction of the PLO, participated in October 7th. So this is not theoretical. This is an extension of what already is.
Yeah. And ever since, Abu Mazen, as he's called, has been extolling.
Yeah,
what happened on the 7th,
and most importantly,
and aligning with its purpose.
If you listen to the language Secretary Blinken is using, he's saying, negotiate the release of hostages, demand that Israel do. In other words, we're demanding of our enemy, and we're saying, please, please, pretty please, and we'll give you a lot to our enemies. It is now becoming the old line we had in Vietnam, which is it's sometimes dangerous to be our enemy, but fatal to be our ally. Israel is now facing an incredible degree of pressure and hostility rather than support in a very difficult... The breadth of the attack on Israel right now is unbelievable. And instead of escalating American support for Israel, you see eroding and fading Americans' support. Really, now it's mixed support in terms of material, but hostility in terms of diplomacy.
And David, we've got 40 seconds left. Where does that lead?
it leads to further escalation, the very thing, and ultimately Israel will have to act on its own without American support. Unfortunately, I didn't get to mention it, but there's threats of use of chemical weapons now by Hezbollah. Israel needs to be helped to deter some of this, not in the but Iran's being encouraged.
This is the great crime, it seems to me, of this dysfunctional national security team of the Biden administration, or Obama-Biden 3.0, as I prefer to call it. It is making matters considerably worse. It is, as you say, treating our enemies better than our friends, and that is a formula for having a lot more enemies, more dangerous enemies at that, and a lot fewer friends. David Wormser, we appreciate your clarity on all of these points, as well as the great work you do these days at our Center for Security Policy. I know you'll keep it up. Come back to us soon. We'll be right back with more with Colonel Grant Newsom right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and it's a delight to say we are joined by Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired, a man, in fact, who has served his country in a number of capacities, notably as a military attaché in Tokyo, as well as a foreign service officer there. He's been a successful entrepreneur and businessman in the Western Pacific, East Asia, for quite some time, and he's the author most recently of a tremendously important book, which you might just see over his shoulder there, When China Attacks, a Warning to America. Colonel Newsom, we're so glad to have you with us. Welcome back, sir.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks very much.
I've got so much I want to talk to you about, a lot of it involving what's happening at the moment out in your neck of the woods in the Western Pacific. But before we get to that, I was speaking earlier in the program with another of our friends and colleagues at the Center for Security Policy, where you are, I'm delighted to say, a senior fellow, David Wormser, about this, well, bizarre situation involving the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. We've got his take on it. I'm very interested in yours. Both, you know, what it says about, well, the chain of command and good order and discipline in the armed forces, but also what it suggests about the larger character and condition of U.S. national security policymaking and the apparatus that is responsible for it, that a guy like the Secretary of Defense could be, well, absent without leave for the better part of a week and nobody even noticed. What do you make of it?
Well, it ought to be a firing offense, if anything is. One might suspect or guess that it was kind of just one of those things. Somebody dropped the ball, a couple people dropped the ball. And maybe, but it's more than just that. I think this is a manifestation of a lack of detail, really a lack of diligence, really at the very top of the U.S. military. And if an officer of any lesser rank did something like this, it wouldn't matter what the excuse was. He's gone. But as I say, it's the symptom of something. And as I say, this lack of professionalism and these mistakes that get the United States into so much trouble, starting with the bug out from Afghanistan. And it just seems to be one after another, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's worth noting that, of course, the guy who was Secretary of Defense when the bug out of Afghanistan took place so disastrously was, wait for it, Lloyd Austin. And the fact that no one was fired for that fiasco, nobody even held accountable for what have been its knock-on effects, including, I fear, an emboldening of our enemies, as well as undermining of confidence in us on the part of our friends. Colonel, if I could put a fine point on it, you've been obviously part of the United States military with great distinction for a long time. We've talked before about your perceptions of its general condition, but I wonder, no pun intended, but I wonder what you make of the fact that the guy who has behaved this way seems, frankly, to be a diversity, equity, inclusion hire rather than someone who is really selected for his excellence as a warrior. Is that consideration here, do you think, sir? And again, you made a very important point about people south of him in the food chain, if you will, being held to a different standard. What is it communicating to the rank and file in the United States military that he is being held to a different standard, but also he's performed so really appallingly?
Well, the lower down the ranks you get, the clearer it is. You know, these guys notice. You know, they notice when the people at higher ranks get off, you know, with things that would get them court-martialed, almost drummed out of the military. And as I say, the troops notice. It probably would happen. But they say they notice that sort of thing. And, you know, it erodes sort of this professionalism and even a belief in oneself, own professionalism, the professionalism of the organization that you must have. Think what we'd be thinking if, say, we knew the Chinese or the Russian military had something like this happen. Now, we'd be laughing to no end, and we would be thinking, well, we'll take these people on if they're this screwed up. As I say, you could say, look at the Marine Corps. You know, their commandant nearly died in late last year, and there was replaced by the assistant commandant. There was never any question of who was in charge. Things continued as they were supposed to. But at the very top, this just really buggers the imagination. Yeah. Beggars the imagination, excuse me.
Yeah, well, does both, honestly. Yeah, Freudian slip. But, Colonel, this really gets to the heart of the matter, though. If this is being noted, as it must, by people of lower ranks, and that a lack of professionalism is corrosive, and it would be perceived by our adversaries as a further invitation to aggression, this would seem to me to be a rather bad time for all of that to be communicated, most especially to the people you watch so closely, and rightly so, the Chinese Communist Party. No?
Oh, to put it mildly, they're watching and they notice. So, you know, keep in mind, if the Houthis are not scared of you, nobody is. And the Houthis sort of acted up before the Secretary of Defense went missing. And so it is just one bad thing after another, just heaping on misery, really onto the organization, onto our own reputations. And to say the bad guys notice, they take heart from it, in fact, and they've just got to be thinking, boy, this is our chance. You know, as for the Secretary himself, You know, I've always thought, you know, when you someone gets the job, you give him a chance. You know, he didn't have the a great record, but give him a chance. We've had so many bad defense secretaries under different administrations that, you know, why not give General Austin a try? And he, you know, ultimately, I don't think he's done all that well. And things have not gone very well on his watch. And, you know, certainly for in the Navy, if your ship goes aground, you're gone the next day. So it's an unfortunate thing,
Colonel,
to have happened.
I want to just say that I think your experience as a Foreign Service officer is shining through here. You are a master of understatement in describing this as just not going well. But let me just ask you this, Grant, because it's I think at work in this particular episode as well. You've described this guy as not having done particularly impressively in some other positions. He's a 4-star general who was commanding at one point in his career Central Command. I just have to ask the question again. Is this a case of, you know, the guy being selected for considerations that have nothing to do with his actual performance as a military officer, and a lot to do with, again, diversity, equity, and inclusion characteristics that, again, are now being elevated above everything else, it seems, by this Biden administration, including in arguably the greatest and most successful meritocracy in the country until now?
Oh, unfortunately, I think you could make a compelling case that such is the case. You know, it's the way it is. And we've also had, you know, if you go down our the list of, you know, 4-star generals and 3-star generals, take your pick, you know, you point out which one of them has actually won a campaign, won a war. The Secretary of Defense would have some competition in this regard. So it's, but as you said, this is, you know, when you start choosing people on anything other than merit and demonstrated success, you're headed for trouble. And, you know, once again, would you want your child to be led by people like this? Or would the troops deserve to be led by people like this? And as I don't think they don't notice, because they do.
And one of the manifestations of this is what's been happening, as you know so well, with both retention, especially the kind of people you want to keep, and recruitment of those that you would like to have serving in the future. Both of these are being adversely affected, and I have the feeling this is part of it. You know, our colleague and friend, Captain James Fennell, another of our distinguished members of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, on this program talked about the woman who is now the chief of naval operations, the senior naval officer in the nation, Lisa Franchetti. And he opined, and I respect his judgment on these matters, that were it not for the fact that she fit the diversity, equity, inclusion, I'd rather prefer to reverse the order there, diversity, inclusion, equity, because the acronym gets more to the heart of the matter, doesn't it? D-I-E rather than D-E-I. But he said, you know, this person, if a male, almost certainly would not have gotten a 3-star, let alone a 4-star, to say nothing of being the chief of naval operations. And I just wonder whether that's true of General Austin as well, do you think?
Probably. In fact, but I will note that you come across, if you get stick around long enough, get up in enough rank, you get close enough to that class, you come across more than a few people who you wonder why they got where they did. In the case of the CNO, however, if you just compare her record with, say, the record of other candidates, and you it's just breathtaking, actually, how she does not compare favorably. And either you do or you don't. It's a tough business, but...
And this matters. It matters. Hold the thought. We're going to come right back with more with Grant Newsom right after this. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's bizarre no-notice absence without leave turns out to have been a result of his treatment for cancer. Revelations that he was off the job for the better part of a week, and no one noticed, though, are but the latest evidence of Team Biden's dangerously metastasizing dysfunctionality. Enemies like Iran, Russia, and especially Communist China are increasingly emboldened by the Biden administration's unwillingness to challenge, let alone meaningfully punish, their aggression. Friends like Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan are increasingly on their own, if not actually being undermined by feckless U.S. diplomacy and declining military power. In the absence, literally and figuratively, of effective Pentagon leadership, we're left with a weak National Security Council and even more hapless State Department mismanaging our national security policy. We need tested, robust, and competent warriors in charge now. This is Frank Affney.
We're back, and Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps, is in the house. I'm very pleased to say, a colleague and friend now of several years, notably in his role as one of our most important contributors to the Committee on the Present Danger, China. He's the author of a terrific book, which you again see over his left shoulder. It is entitled When China Attacks, and it's what I want to talk with you about next, Colonel, against the backdrop of this, spectacle in the United States military and the national security team of President Biden more generally. We do have an event this weekend in Taiwan, as you know, an election for the president of that, I will call it, nation. The Chinese Communist Party might be dissatisfied, shall we say, with the results, because it seems as though a man who is not in favor of surrendering the sovereignty, the freedom, and the constitutional character of that nation may win, instead of people who would be more inclined to submit to China's demands for reunification, as they call it. Talk a little bit about this election, sir, and how you see it playing out and what the Chinese response may well be.
Sure. There's basically three candidates running. The first one is from the current ruling party, and they want nothing to do with unification of any sort with the mainland. The second candidate is from the old KMT, which traditionally ran Taiwan. They are considered softer on China, more willing to cut a deal. And then there's the TPP, a third party, which is sort of in between. It looks as though, if the polling is to be believed, that the incumbent party will win. They're the presidential candidate, but keep in mind that there's a and once again, that's a prediction. So if they don't win, I won't be surprised, but it's going to be close. But there's also a legislative election going on. So they're like electing congressmen, it's the equivalent. And it is possible that the opposition parties will win or will get a majority. And that can really hamper what the ruling party, the current party in power, tries to do to improve Taiwan's defense. They can just drag their feet, make things difficult. So that could happen. But what I think is going to happen is that China, if they're watching very closely, if the DPP, the candidate that wants nothing to do with mainland China, if they win, I don't think China's going to attack immediately, but they will turn up the military pressure with aircraft and ships, you know, intruding into Taiwan territory. There'll be political and economic pressure as well. But even if the opposition wins, they're going to do the same thing, but they're going to wait and see what the opposition might deliver. But it's the American election, which I think is the one that's really going to force Beijing or cause Beijing to decide just what it wants to do, whether it wants to roll the dice and move on Taiwan.
So am I to interpret what you just said as an indication that you think that they may wait for the outcome of the U.S. election, or do you think that they may act in advance of it, fearful that it's not going to go the way they'd like and it will be more difficult for them to proceed on Taiwan? And again, I want to talk with you a little bit about what you think that looks like. You've written a book about what it looks like, but I want you to share your insights at the moment on, because in addition to the, the, you know, aerial penetrations and the missile launches and the naval, you know, sort of blockade in prototype, at least, we've also now recently had balloons overflying the place and a satellite launched over Taiwan and increasing, you know, aggressive signals being sent to others, including Japan, where you're based.
Yeah, I would say it's just, once again, it's my prediction that
this is why we pay you the big bucks, Colonel, is to make those hard choices.
Well, you know, I don't mind doing it. You know, I tell you, the Washington football team's got the Super Bowl next year for sure, but the but you know, I think they could go before, if they wanted to attack or move forcefully against Taiwan, they could go before the election, they could, American election, they could go after it. But they will be watching closely to see the state of affairs in the United States. And if it's chaotic, where you have rioting in the streets the way we did in 2020, that China is going to be sorely tempted to move. And so that could happen before or after the election, either one. I could see that happening. You know, what they would actually... So go ahead.
Let me ask you about a specific question. And again, you're a Marine, so you know a thing or two about amphibious operations. And I think we've talked about this before, but just to sort of catch people up on what is, well, a current topic of debate among, I think, professionals in our space. And that is, if they do decide on the basis of the election outcome in Taiwan, let's say the Democratic People's Party prevails, that's the incumbent party, and they don't like it, and they conclude that it's better to go when Joe Biden is in office than to take their chances with anybody coming after him. Do you agree with some of our friends who say, well, there's a window in the Taiwan Strait that starts in April and goes through May and then picks up again in August, I think, in which you can transit those waters, not without some difficulty from, you know, enemy fire perhaps, but the sea state is compatible with getting into those beaches and not getting bogged down on mud shoals and the like. What is your, what's your assessment of that, sir?
I asked an oceanographer.
Well, what's a guy who knows about oceans.
Oh my goodness.
Oceanographer, I think.
Oceanographer, my goodness. I had a Taiwanese one, actually, a couple of years ago about that. And her reply was, look at the ferry schedules. And her point was that ferries run all year round. So I'm not so convinced that there's this window based on sea states. But also keep in mind that an attack is not just a D-Day style amphibious assault. You can move troops in by air, helicopters, paratroopers, and you've got accurate missiles that hit what they're supposed to hit. You've been practicing for 50 years getting the targeting right, fifth columnist. So it's a very different, you know, so it's not just trying to get onto a beach.
Got it. We've got to take one last break with Colonel Grant Newsom. Stay tuned for more right after this. We're back. Colonel Grant Newsom is generously giving us a third segment, for which we're very grateful. It's always an honor to have him with us, but especially at a time such as this, when his expertise on matters involving China, the Western Pacific, our military, and more is so urgently needed. Colonel, I wanted to specifically ask you about something that, again, we've discussed before, but I really think the American people urgently need to know more about. And that is the fact that we're looking at an environment in which Xi Jinping, the emperor of China, if you will, has been torching on, what I call them, strategic arson around the world, notably Ukraine, Israel, the Red Sea now, and other flashpoints seemingly being teed up in Korea, maybe Latin America, elsewhere. One of them, however, that is a particular concern, understandably, to those of us who live here, is the possibility that he may have amassed enough tinder, if you will, in the United States to light it up at will, and thereby further distract, yes, of course, but also possibly incapacitate us in terms of contending with whatever aggression he may have in mind for Taiwan. And you enumerated a number of things, including that enemy within or fifth column. Could that be the case here, especially when we keep hearing about these Chinese People's Liberation Army personnel, maybe special forces at that, that are being inserted, by some accounts, by the tens of thousands into the United States? Your thoughts?
Oh, I'd say there's 100% certainty of it. This is Chinese doctrine. Before you attack somebody, you make sure that their rear areas, their society is as chaotic as it possibly can be. Inserting people into sort of your target country, or the country that's going to protect the one that you're really going to go after. This is what they do. And if you look at Chinese communist history, this is what they've done, and particularly go back to the Chinese Civil War. So you would expect actually special forces teams, you know, shooting things up. You're also going to find, of course, the water doesn't work, that a lot of our key infrastructure, the electronics, the electrical grids, the ATM systems, suddenly have a whole lot of problems. And as I said, don't work. You're going to find also that these the progressive movement, the ones who have looking for some cause to complain about, they'll easily turn to protesting and blocking and interrupting American efforts to support Taiwan because we provoked it. We're going to cause World War III. The Chinese are actually on the right side. So expect America to...
This is not your view, of course. This is what
This is what they will say. If you have these people who will excuse Hamas, these people are absolutely, they're amoral, and they will have no trouble getting into the streets on China's behalf. This is, unfortunately, this is what we're going to get for letting this sort of thing go on. And we will pay the price. So this is going to be part of a Chinese effort to go against Taiwan, go against maybe Japan, the Philippines, but just use Taiwan as your example. But this is doctrine, and they're going to play it.
You know, the book that we put together, in no small measure with your help, Colonel Newsom, and the form of those webinars, the Committee on the Present Danger China. And as always, folks, I want to encourage you to take a look at them. presentdangerchina.org is where you can find them, available for free, including the one we'll be doing on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find that and join us if you care to. But in this book, The Indictment, Colonel, we cite a speech by the then Defense Minister of China 20 years ago, a general by the name of Chi Haoqian, saying to a closed audience of senior party officials, we believe, that there will be a lot of talk about Taiwan, but the main enemy is the United States. He also went on to say that, you know, the mission of depopulating the United States so that it could be colonized by China was given to the illegal biological warfare program of the Chinese Communist Party. You've listed a number of horribles, but as you know, one of the things that is a particular concern is whether these characters, having already attacked us once with biological weapons in the form of the COVID attack, may marry up with these biological laboratories they probably have across the country. We found one in California, but it's likely not the only one. Your thoughts on that as a distinct possibility?
Oh, yeah, I would expect them to do it. if they can, and I think they probably can. It is about that simple. They saw what happened with COVID, and I think they like the results of it. And I would expect to see that happening as well. They will use everything they possibly can. And we've made it really easy for them. We'll be the first great nation to actually have committed suicide.
Well, I'm not sure whether that's the first in history, but it's going to be probably the most egregious example of it, in that we've ignored for too long, I think, the counsel that people like you have been providing over the years. And Grant, it's particularly worrying, as you say, because it's not just the vulnerabilities that have needlessly opened in places like the Western Pacific, but it's also the fact that even now, there's no evidence that our leadership, we talked a little bit about some of its problems earlier, is sensitive to, let alone prepared to do anything about the vulnerabilities here on the home front. And that is potentially suicidal. I think you're absolutely right. To the extent that it's not too late to do something about it, what would you suggest is the urgency of getting on with a whole of society war footing here?
Well, it needs to be done a week ago. And you had, if we don't get onto this and really recognize the danger we face, that we have a very good chance of being defeated. And there are people who understand it. I would suggest Representative Gallagher in the Congress, he does. There's a number of people on Capitol Hill who do understand how serious it is. There's not enough of them.
Not enough of them, and we need to grow a bunch of them right quick. Colonel Grant Newsom, thank you so much. I've run out of time to give my latest takeaway, but we'll do that on the next occasion. In the meantime, thanks to all of you for listening this time, and I hope you'll come back to us for more of Securing America next time. And until then, go forth and multiply.